Sunday of the season of Easter, and the gospel reading for this Sunday is John chapter 5, verses 1 through 9. After this, there was a festival of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now, in Jerusalem, by the sheep gate, there is a pool called in Hebrew Bethzatha, which has five porticos. In these lay many invalids, blind, lame, and paralyzed. One man was there who had been ill for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and knew that he had been there a long time, he said to him, "Do you want to be made well?" The sick man answered him, "Sir, I have no one to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up, and while I am making my way, someone else steps down ahead of me." Jesus said to him, "Stand up, take your mat, and walk." At once the man was made well, and he took up his mat and began to walk. Now that day was a Sabbath. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
My grandmother Baber, that's my maiden name. My grandmother Baber enjoyed her various and sundry ailments. She loved to describe her latest pain or even surgery. And if for some mysterious reason she was not feeling bad herself, she would regale us with the latest illnesses of her friends. Sadly for her, my grandfather was a fairly healthy man. So he was of little help. There was nothing we could complain about ourselves that she had not experienced and had had it much worse. The stories abounded. I wouldn't want to give the impression, however, that she was morose. Quite the contrary. Talking about her lack of health seemed to energize her. It did not energize us, but that did not hinder her. I sometimes think that her grave marker, she was from Winchester, Kentucky, she's buried there. I sometimes think her grave marker would be the perfect candidate for that old joke, "I told you I was sick." Now, I share that with you, and I love her. I share that with you because I thought of her as I worked on this text. Or it'd be more accurate to say that the text worked on me. I'm both drawn to that text and I'm a little scared of it, too. I've decided against preaching it at least a couple of times in the lectionary cycle. But I've been brought back. One factor that kept bringing me back to it is that I actually visited this site in January of 2001. There's an excavation right in the old city of Jerusalem, next to the Church of St. Anne, that is really most probably the very place described in this passage. The pool of Bethsaida, Bethzatha, Bethesda is another way it's been translated. There are still partial walls from those porticos in that excavation. There are still pools of water that form from the water table there. I can see that in my mind's eye. But let me tell you right up front, the problem, or part of the problem, is that my interpretation, which has evolved, is a bit subtle, and it barely even gives a nod to the larger context. And most of the commentaries and resources I've consulted on the passage urge the preacher to consider the rest of the story. If we were to read on another 9 verses or so, we'd see that healing this man got Jesus in really big trouble with the Jewish religious leaders, not only because he healed him on the Sabbath, but also because he answered their criticism by saying, "My Father is still working and I also am still working." In saying this, he was making himself equal to God, and they began to plot to kill him. That's a major context. So we don't want to lose sight of that. But it's really not where we're going to go this morning. We're staying within this reading, and we're going to push the edges a little. I also want to tell you up front that what scares me about preaching this text is this. It's a text that could be, and probably has been, used to support the notion that we who are sick in some way, we who are broken, could become well if only we would believe. If only we would quit feeling sorry for ourselves and pull ourselves up. If only we had faith. But that's not really here. It's not a story about a faith healing. There's nothing in the text to indicate that the man had faith. Had faith in Jesus, didn't know who Jesus was, actually. We would understand he didn't know who he was if we read on. I think at least one way to see this story is that it's about the unprovoked grace of God. Here's the question that echoes in my head and my heart. Jesus asked this man, "Do you want to be made well?" Seems like a no-brainer, doesn't it? After all, the man's been ill for 38 years. He's been trying to get into the healing waters of the pool for a long time. The story was that God's angels would come unpredictably and stir the waters of that pool. And when that happened, whoever got in would be healed. But he doesn't answer Jesus' question, does he? Jesus says, "Do you want to be made well?" He launches into an explanation of how no one will help him get in the pool when the waters are stirred. Other, more selfish people get in ahead of him. I hear a little whine in his voice. And I think of my grandmother. What might this man's life have been like up to this point? We don't know much. We know he's been coming to this place a long time, as have others. John tells us there are many invalids, blind, lame, paralyzed. We can imagine that they may have become something of a community. A community of broken people who come together at this sort of poor person's health spa. Except there are no appointments, no predictability as to when the waters might bubble up. Probably they compare notes. Most likely they talk with each other about how they got to be in the shape they are in. Because in that society, their conditions define who they are. Being around the pool at Bethesda is their job. It's a brief story. We're given very little detail. We're not really told what is wrong with this man, except he's unable to make his way into the pool without help, and no one will help him. We are not told why Jesus should happen along and approach the man. Probably the man is hoping this nice young Jewish fellow will hang around and help him get in the pool if the water starts moving. It seems to me that is what he thinks Jesus is implying in the question, "Do you want to be made well?" I wish we could all read this in the original Greek. Heck, I wish I could. But I still do a few word studies. And the word translated here as well, "Do you want to be made well?" has really deeper connotations than the possible cure of a physical ailment. It also means sound or whole, W-H-O-L-E. Jesus asked the man, "Do you want to be made whole?" Now there's a question. That question has much deeper implications. We open ourselves to God's grace and the possibility of wholeness, things could change. Change is not our favorite thing. Sometimes the brokenness we know feels safer than the wholeness we don't know. Anne Lamott is a writer and a very good one. She is not delicate. She's honest. She's often funny. She has become a person of faith, a Presbyterian even, and in her early book, aptly named Traveling Mercies, she shares part of that journey to faith. I imagine some of you have read this book. And don't worry, I won't quote her directly here in church. Her language is salty. But her coming to faith, to wholeness, from incredible brokenness, is a powerful witness to how deeply we try to resist God's grace. She was born in California in the early 50s. Her parents did not believe in God. In fact, her father was the son of Presbyterian missionaries who raised their children in Tokyo, and her father despised Christianity. He called Presbyterians God's frozen people. Her parents and their friends did a lot of good works, but they also did a lot of drinking. She writes, "None of the adults in our circle believed in God. Believing meant that you were stupid. Ignorant people believed, uncouth people believed, and we were heavily couth." My dad was a writer and my parents were intellectuals who went to the Newport Jazz Festival every year for their vacation. We were raised to believe in books and music and nature. That's what she wrote. But secretly, she did believe in God as a small child. She loved to go spend the night with her Catholic friend and go to Mass with the family in the morning. Then she grew out of it. As a teenager, she showed talent for writing, a disdain for Christianity, and a propensity for abusing alcohol and drugs. She was devastated when her favorite English teacher came back from summer vacation a born-again Christian. But then, in a small college in the East, she had to read Kierkegaard. And once again, she knew she believed there was a God. Back in California, she published a novel. Her parents had long since split. Her father had died of a brain tumor. She descended into her own hell. Living first with one friend, then another, she drank, took drugs, became bulimic. Sometimes on Sundays, when she was hungover, she would go to a flea market. This was in Marin County. She would go to a flea market in a poor area because she could get cheap food there. She found herself drawn to a small, dilapidated Presbyterian church, a mostly African-American congregation. She was drawn by the singing. She wouldn't go in. She just stood in the door and listened, leaving when the preaching started because she didn't want to hear about Jesus. But she came back fairly often. One night, sober and feeling that she was probably at the lowest point of her life, she turned out the light, and in the darkness, she became aware of someone hunkered down in the corner of the room. The feeling was so strong, she turned the light back on for a moment. She saw no one. But in the dark again, she knew beyond any doubt that it was Jesus with her in the corner of the room, and she was appalled. She knew that her hilarious progressive friends would think she was crazy if she became a Christian. She knew her life would have to change, and she was not ready. The next week, everywhere she went, she had the feeling that a little cat was following her, wanting her to reach down and pick it up, but she wasn't ready. She didn't stay for the whole service that Sunday, and the singing washed over her. She raced home and felt the little cat running at her heels, and she opened the door, stood there a minute, and then she said, "I quit." She took a long, deep breath and said out loud, "All right, you can come in." That was her moment of conversion. This was her moment to answer yes to the question of Jesus, do you want to be made whole? Now, things didn't automatically fall into beautiful places right then and there. It took her a while to quit drinking. Some friends stuck with her, others didn't. But she became a part of that small church, and she drew strength from that welcoming community. She's still there. We know the brokenness. The brokenness can become our job. Wholeness? Now that can be scary. That means change. That means opening to God's possibilities for us. We wonder what became of this man who took up his mat and walked. There's no indication he came to faith. There's no indication he even showed any gratitude. But here's the thing. That doesn't stop God. Jesus saw this man and he had compassion. He asked an important question. Do you want to be made whole? The man didn't even know how important that question was. But it didn't stop Jesus. I think Jesus just couldn't help himself. That's who he is. As Charles Wesley wrote in that wonderful hymn, Jesus, thou art all compassion, pure, unbounded love thou art. Do you want to be made whole? Friends, we don't have to be afraid to answer yes to Jesus. We have the promise of his peace. Not a peace the world can give, as he says in John's Gospel, his own peace. We have his presence in the bread and the cup. We have this company of brothers and sisters to support us on our journeys out of brokenness. We can open the doors of our hearts and say to Jesus, all right, you can come in. For all of us.
Thank you.
Widely accepted and tied to the Eucharistic feast. We believe.